Hi, everybody. Program note, we now post this show every single day. It used to be weekly, now we're daily. And you know what? More and more people are watching it every single day because we hold no punches, so look for it. Truth bomb, number one. What Bibi Netanyahu is willing to do to stay in power. Truth bomb number two. Do you think he'd be willing to bomb an Iranian consulate building? He just did. Truth bomb number three. A U.S. congressman does it again. He says Russia must surrender. Now he suggests using nuclear weapons in Gaza. Nuclear weapons. Can you imagine saying that? I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. So here's where we are. Just when you think that things could not possibly get any worse, it has. It appears the conflict in the Middle East between the Israelis and the Palestinians is escalating, or shall I say, it's being escalated. Let me cut right to the proverbial chase. The prevailing sentiment both inside, this is important, inside and outside of Israel, is that Bibi Netanyahu cannot last as the prime minister without the war. That is not me saying that. That is not some Western forces saying that. That's not the global South saying that. That's not Arab countries coming together and saying that about Bibi Netanyahu. No. The people who are saying that very thing are Israelis. Look at this Reuters headline right there. See it? Quoting a poll conducted of Israelis by Israelis. Look at that. 15% of them want him to not, or pardon me, only 15% of them want him to continue as prime minister after the war. Only 15%. Israelis. Bibi Netanyahu, once the powerhouse of Israeli politics, now finds himself drowning in a sea of discontent and dissent. And that is why many inside and outside of Israel believe that Netanyahu's saber-rattling and his military aggression isn't being done to safeguard Israel's security. They say it's being done to safeguard Bibi Netanyahu's political security. I mean, and if that poll is right, without Gaza, there's no need for Bibi Netanyahu. Is that why he continues to escalate the attacks in Gaza? The obvious answer, yes. Yes. But then what happens after Gaza, right? Ask yourself, if I'm Bibi Netanyahu and I want to stay in power, what do I do to stay here? What happens after Gaza? There would need to be some other type of continuation of aggression with somebody else then, right? Let's see. Who could that escalation involve? The answer is pretty obvious, right? Iran.
Iran is pledging revenge tonight, accusing Israel of attacking its embassy complex in Syria and reportedly killing at least 7 Iranian military officials. That includes a top general. The airstrike comes as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu faces growing pressure to step down.
Isn't that amazing? Let me just make an aside here real quick. Did you notice her words? Iran is accusing Israel. Not like it didn't happen somehow. They're just accusing them of it. There's a possibility maybe this didn't even happen. We know the building exploded. We know the... Wow. Iran is accusing Israel, not Israel has. So let me tell you what Israel has done, not just what Iran has accused it of doing, what the whole world knows. There it is. What she just said, essentially. Netanyahu's next escalatory move. It's an airstrike conducted that targeted Iran's consulate in Syria, killing 2 Iranian generals. It is without question. I mean, no matter how you spin it, no matter how you look at this, it is a violation of international law in multiple ways. He is assassinating the military commander of another country. He is bombing a diplomatic mission, a consulate, no less, which goes against all the norms of diplomacy. And oh, he's also conducting airstrikes right in the heart of another country, a sovereign country. I mean, think about that. Think about what just happened. And it's like, Iran is accusing. That's our U.S. media, folks. The biggest concern is that he's willing to drag the U.S. into a conflict with Iran for his own political salvation. That's what a lot of people over here in Washington are a little concerned about right now. It's exactly the type of thing about which the U.S. has feigned outrage, warning Netanyahu not to go overboard in Gaza. Whatever you do, watch yourself, they say, not do, and warning Netanyahu not to expand the conflict, they say, not do. Listen to this. This is an earlier comment from, do I have this here? Yeah, it's from National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, announcing that it's really important that this war should not escalate. Let me read you what he said. Here's the quote. It's Jake Sullivan. "We seek to stop the spread of conflict and to create the conditions for de-escalation." See that word? "This does not lessen at all Israel's responsibility to conduct its campaign in a way that upholds international humanitarian law." So there you go. He's spelling it out for him. Can't do that. Don't cross that line. Sounds good, right? No escalation. Israel must respect international and humanitarian law. But then what happens when Israel and Netanyahu do just the opposite? Do whatever the hell they want to do. What happens when they completely ignore what Jake Sullivan just said right there? Shouldn't we don't want you to do this. We're the United States. We're the ones who give you all the money. We're the ones who give you all the arms. We're the ones who give you all the guns. We're the ones that have your back. Please don't do that. We're going to do it anyway. I mean, that's the answer. Nothing. I mean, absolutely nothing. What's the United States going to do about the fact that Israel has done whatever the hell it wants to do once again? Nothing. Of course. If any other country did what Israel just did, bombing the consulate of another country, assassinating two foreign leaders, two generals, no less, I mean, Sullivan himself, right, and the Biden administration would be screaming at the top of their lungs, calling for war and et cetera. But when Israel does it, oh, it's just BB being BB. But you know what? I mean, this is serious. It's serious for us here in the United States. And the world is watching. And with every brazen act that violates international and humanitarian law by Israel, this country, our country, this country right here, where I'm standing, sitting, whatever it is I'm doing right now, the U.S. of America loses more and more respect, especially among countries in the global South, because they're looking at us like, what are you guys, pansies? You keep saying don't do it, and then they do it, and they go, I'm sorry. Don't do it. Okay. For years, Israel has lived off of its reputation for victimhood, using it both as a defense mechanism, which is, you know, verified, by the way, and as a rallying cry when they've gone after Palestinians. Today, what's interesting is, with the exception of that small number of Westerners who consume corporate media every single day, most of the world views Israel right now as aggressors. And certainly in this case, they now see Iran, not Israel, as the victim. Isn't that a fine kettle of fish? Joining us now to talk about this is international relations and security analyst who we always welcome to this show, Mark Sloboda. I guess let's start with the incident. This thing really kind of freaked me out when I saw this. I'm thinking, who are these generals, and why did Israel want to assassinate them? Can you help us, Mark?
Sure. Rick, thanks for having me on the show. I think, actually, you hit the nail on the head with regards to the primary motivation of Israel for this attack. So they used a U.S.-built F-35 jet to fire a missile into Damascus, Syria, to target the Iranian consulate. In that strike, seven top IRGC officials, including two generals, were killed. One of those generals, Reza Zahedi, was the commander of the Quds Force, responsible for operations in Syria and Lebanon. But more important, I think, than specifically who was killed was the fact that this was an attack on an Iranian conflict. This is a new level of escalation and another in a long string of provocations that Israel has launched against Iran. We have seen prior strikes killing IRGC commanders and generals. We have seen a terror attack on the anniversary of the funeral of Qasem Soleimani, the previous Quds Force commander,
who was assassinated.
Whom Trump assassinated in Baghdad in 2020. We've also seen terrorist attacks on Iranian gas pipelines. And the Iranians at this point must be extremely frustrated that whatever they do is not enough to provoke the Iranians into an overreaction. They want to push the Iranians into making a major strike on Israel that they believe will draw the United States into a direct conflict with Iran. This is because the only path that Netanyahu sees is to escalate his way out of the Gaza conflict. Israel is not winning the conflict in Gaza. This is because of the standards they set themselves for victory. He insisted that they have to eliminate Hamas completely, completely wipe out Hamas. And they've said it so many times and so loudly that they've got no room to maneuver on that. And they can't do that without ethnically cleansing the entire population of Palestinians out of the Gaza Strip, which they're having problems doing because the Egyptian government won't open the borders to allow the entire Gaza population to be driven across, because they know very well that they'll never be allowed back in.
Do you think, and as I'm sitting here thinking about this, Mark, I'm sitting here in the United States of America. We all live in this country and are fed the media line that Israel is great and Iran is really, really bad. And yet you and I are watching a narration of events that have taken place that you've just eloquently taken us through, where Iran is the one that's getting all the dirt in this case. And I guess we're left with the possibility that Israel might be doing this because they don't mind getting into a war or starting a war with Iran, because, after all, America's got their back. Do you think deep down they're actually thinking that that's my role as an American citizen, to go to war with Iran for Israel?
Absolutely. And the power of the American-Israeli Political Action Committee, IPAC, in Washington is testimony to that. What American politician who is not politically career suicidal will go against IPAC? No one.
Yeah.
IPAC regularly puts out notifications, follow them on Twitter, bragging about how many American politicians it has influence on, which means it has bought. It has become a kind of an orthodoxy of U.S. foreign policy that Israel is some kind of golden calf that cannot be impinged on in any way. In fact, under the rules-based order that the U.S. keeps claiming it has established, we make the rules, we give the orders. It often seems that Israel, even more immune to any rules that the United States itself is under that hegemony.
Do you think right now, and this is why I value your opinion on this, because you're not in this bubble where we Americans live inside Washington, D.C., watching NBC and reading the New York Times and the Washington Post and, you know, CNN and Fox News and all that stuff. So you don't live off of that stuff. You have a more global perspective. So here's the question with that long setup. Speaking globally, How is Israel seen right now throughout the world? And maybe I'll push you a little more with saying, how much, if at all, have they damaged themselves as a result of this?
Yeah, so I think we have to speak of it outside the West,
right?
I.e. the rest of the world with a capital R, the global majority of the world that is not part of the U.S., NATO, and associated countries that comprise the West. In that part of the world, Israel is seen as a rogue state protected by the United States that has been occupying and ethnic cleansing Palestine for decades in defiance of international law and innumerable demands by the United Nations, the General Assembly, even the most recent ceasefire, and that they have now gone directly into the committing of genocide. As South Africa, which is seen as one of the moral leaders of the world, considering the apartheid that they themselves underwent, supported by the U.S. nonetheless up until the 1980s. They have launched this case in the International Court of Justice accusing Israel of genocide, and the International Court of Justice put out a preliminary ruling seeming to support the possibility and demanding that Israel stop its actions, to which Israel responded by putting up a big middle finger towards the International Court of Justice and the rest of the world and continued on with what they're doing.
When we come back, I want to share something with you because it gets even more curious and curious, as Yogi Berra once said. There is a congressman in Washington who has come out after already blasting and saying we should all but take over Russia, said the same thing about Iran. But you're not going to believe, you are not going to believe what he just said about Gaza and what we should do to Gaza. It's remarkable, and you're going to hear it when we come back. You stay right there.
To shape out, disdain becomes the etiquette, and engagement equals betrayal. When so many find themselves worlds apart, we choose to look for common ground.
There is, welcome back, by the way, I'm Rick Sanchez. There's another story that I want to catch you up on, another one of those I can't believe he said this kind of things. It affects the conflict in the Middle East again, so we're kind of staying with the theme. This is a U.S. congressman who has made, I suppose, what you would call or has tried to be like very Patton-esque. He's made these like Patton-esque statements in the past, you know, suggesting the Ukrainians, for example, should just finish off Russia, end it. Said kind of the same things about Iran, for example. One of these guys who just thinks we have a right to go all over the world and just kill people if he doesn't like them, for example. As crazy as that sounds, wait till you hear what he just said now. Just when you thought that Democrats were in big trouble with voters for Biden's incredibly insensitive position on Palestinians, along comes a Republican congressman to prove that he can be much more insensitive. Talk about helping out the other guy, right? Yeah, it's a Michigan congressman actually came out and said that he wants Gaza leveled, and he even used the terms Hiroshima and Nagasaki to express it. Here it is.
We shouldn't be spending a dime on humanitarian aid. It should be like Nagasaki and Hiroshima.
To hell with them. No humanitarian aid. They don't need humanitarian aid. Just nuke them. Just blast a nuclear bomb over Gaza. That's what he's saying. Like Nagasaki and Hiroshima, two cities that were nuked. I mean, he's suggesting we do it again, but this time to Palestinians. That's what he's saying. And by the way, Wahlberg, that's his name, Tim Wahlberg, Michigan congressperson, he now says, well, he was taken out of context. How do you take a guy out of context who says, you know, who makes a comparison between Nagasaki and Hiroshima or Hiroshima? And it's likely nothing will come of it, by the way. You think people are going to come after him for saying something so crazy? No. However, when Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib defended Palestinians' right to self-determination using the words from the river to the sea, she was rebuked and she was censured by the entire congressional body. Why can a man say something like this and the only person commenting on it is me and a few other people? And when Rashida Tlaib said what she said, she was a front page news for at least 2 weeks. It's amazing to think of that. Mark Sloboda joins us once again. Your comment on that?
Yeah, I think it's actually case typical for the violent, Neanderthalic, militant mentality when it comes to foreign and military policy of a lot of U.S. politicians. Certainly, he was playing to the Republican base that appreciates rhetoric like one, of course, it shows a complete delusion with his understanding of what military power can accomplish in terms of political solutions. I mean, sure, you could wipe out the entire Palestinian population of Gaza, but that is not going to solve Israel's political problems in the East. In fact, it would almost certainly accrue to them. But this is hardly new. I'm old enough to remember, as I know you are, John McCain singing bomb, 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 bomb Iran to the tune of the Beach Boys, which was met in the Western mainstream media by a few chuckles. Right? Because it's Iran and they deserve it, right? And the Palestinians deserve it. The saddest thing, though, if you take a look at pictures of what Gaza looks like today, a large portion of it, like the majority of Gaza, because of the amount of U.S.-made bombs dropped by U.S.-made fighters that have been dropped on Gaza, already looks like Nagasaki and Hiroshima.
I've heard a lot of people say that. I want to ask you a question about Iran. And again, I go back to our perspective as Americans. I mean, we see people dressed in robes. We see supposedly women who are punished for not wearing headwear. And to us, oftentimes, to be fair, it does look like a society that has not yet reached the same level as many other countries around the world. Fair or unfair? And that's the perspective we have. In actuality, as I sit down over the weekend and read about Iran, I understand that it's actually moderating a lot more, that it's actually trying not to be a warish type of country or economy. How would you assess Iran at this particular time?
Yeah, I think actually that says far more about the United States than it does about Iran. This belief that Americans have, this American exceptionalism, this supremacist ideology, where they believe that they are both systemically and morally superior to every other nation on earth. And that gives them the right to, well, among other things, bomb them like Nagasaki and Hiroshima.
Right.
I think is the most politically dangerous ideology in the world today.
Is there a possibility that Iran will come out of this in the end better positioned than Israel? Down to 1 minute.
Yeah, so far Israel has done a lot has shown incredible restraint against the Israeli provocation in an attempt to avoid direct conflict with the U.S. They have had to tie Hezbollah stand down, as well as restrained, I believe, Hezbollah's actions in northern Israel. I think that they will play this one smart and will not overreach their hand. And what vengeance they seek will be of the quiet sort rather than the big and flashy sort that Israel would prefer.
Interesting you say that, with so many people saying Iran is going to respond to Israel in a very warlike fashion. The suggestion is, well, they've been attacked before and they haven't. They'll probably follow that course. But one wonders then, at what point does the anger boil over? And we'll wait and see. Mark, as usual, thank you so much for joining us and for your comments. Before we go, I want to remind you of what we do here. Our mission is basically to try and tell all sides of the story, to ask the right questions, simple, de-silo the world. We shouldn't live in little boxes where we only agree with people who agree with us, right? Truth doesn't live in boxes. Truths are everywhere. I'm Rick Sanchez. That's how we treat this show, here on Direct Impact.